You're listening to the Antioch Word. I'm Tom Amrine. Last quarter, we recorded Antioch's Co-op Swap. If you're not familiar with it, Co-op Swap is an event at which students who just came back from their respective co-ops share their experiences and answer questions from the audience. In past episodes, we've heard stories from all the panelists, but this time, we decided to zero in on the co-op story from Malca Barrow and Lucas Batista, both in the class of 2018. A quick note on the audio. The recording situation at the event itself wasn't ideal, so the tape came out pretty low quality. However, we followed up with Lucas and Malca after the event, so the majority of what you'll hear is fine.
For our past co-op, Lucas and I spent a month in Yellow Springs working with Community Solutions, and their work with this film that they're currently helping fund, which is called Saving Walden's World, and part of it is set in Cuba, and it's about permaculture and sustainability and women's rights. And we spent a month there helping translate parts of the film and doing subtitles for the film, and then we went to Mexico for a few weeks and then Cuba for about a month.
We were mostly consulting on our thoughts about the film and how it reflected, how the vision of what they had so far reflected the film.
I think we got a good variety in that we were there for about 26 days and went to about 11 different cities. We suggested maybe that they incorporate some aspects of the feminist movements that were filmed, but weren't necessarily part of the documentary yet.
I think it was hard to get really ingrained in the culture. Tourism and interacting with tourists can always be a good way to make money, and usually it was the best way to make money. So there was always this strange dynamic of your interaction with another Cuban person was usually through some means of financial gain. They were just trying to, you know, live day to day. It's nothing against them, but it did make it harder for deeper interactions to happen.
Yeah, and there was still an aspect of removal from, like, really being able to see what life is like for them, and just kind of an unbiased viewpoint is, in my opinion, almost impossible.
We usually didn't want to tell people we were from the United States, so we would just lie. A lot of people, for some reason, just made the assumption that I was from Spain. And we would tell people that Malca was from England sometimes.
Usually. There's a lot of hustling that happens in Cuba, especially when we were in Havana. I think that's when it was the worst. And we could see a very markedly different response to us when we would say we were from the U.S. versus when we would say we were from somewhere else, like Spain or England or, you know, somewhere else in Europe. Like, it's just people kind of like harangued us a lot less. And so it just became easier for us to travel without that. Our experiences watching the film and doing the translating for it set me up with an idea of what Cuba was going to be like, especially in terms of women's rights and how women are treated and the differences between there and the U.S. And so going there was kind of a little bit of a shock. I think for me, that was probably one of the more difficult things is going into a situation that I really just wasn't prepared for in terms of how men treat women. And so in the sense of the film, when we came back, we were of a different perspective than what Jim was able to as the director and as a man going there and filming on his own. I think that was a very different perspective than two college-age students going there and experiencing something completely different because of our demographics. And so with that in mind, I think we were able to give a much needed in my mind perspective.
Do you think it was important at all that you guys were there during like a really transitional time in Cuban history?
Yeah, I think we really saw the strength of the regime and what that meant. I think when we first started this presence of the, you know, what is the Cuban Revolution or the whole political movement, we saw that presence through propaganda posters that were the only really form of advertisement. But that was pretty much it. We didn't really, there were other signs where you could see things, but, when his death happened, that was when you really saw things where they would like, people would stop selling alcohol and no music and
things started getting banned.
yeah, things started getting banned and was like that for about 7 days. I think about it was seven days. Or nine.
Yeah, I think it was also really interesting because we were able to speak to a lot of people individually about how they felt about Fidel dying. And I mean, depending on how much time we had spent with them, they were a little bit more forthcoming than others. But what was really, really interesting to me was how the nation as a whole was portrayed through the news that we saw on the Cuban television. How like you would see everyone crying on the news, and there were memorials to him going kind of like 24/7 news coverage about his death, which makes sense. But then you would talk to some people on the street, and for the most part, it seemed like those that we interacted with had more of like a nonchalance air about his death. They were kind of like, well, you know, he was sick for a long time. It was a little bit more expected, to the point where some people that I was talking to really didn't seem like it fazed them at all, his death. But then we also interacted with some people that were very upset by his death, and we saw a very wide range of responses to his death.
I know also when they were interviewing, you know, quote unquote, random strangers off the street in the news, this person would be like, what do you think about the death of Fidel Castro? And then this person would come out with like the longest monologue that like you would ever heard about, and like how he is the true leader and this and that. And you're like, where did this person come up from? Is this a poet? Like, but I think that's kind of what they wanted you to believe, was like, this is how inspired they are from the death of Fidel Castro, the great revolutionary leader.
It was kind of interesting to see the change in media as well there. We noticed often before Fidel's death that when we would see pictures of the government, and when the government was kind of shown in like graffiti or murals or on television, it was always Fidel next to Che, and they would portray them together. And then after his death, you kind of saw, almost as soon as it happened, the montage of Fidel during the news coverage about it would show Fidel next to Raul. And you kind of saw the transition of power happening as we were there, which was really, I think, amazing for us to kind of witness that change occurring right almost as soon as his death occurred, you know.
It maybe validated what we were thinking as far as what is the strength of this regime, or what is the influence of this regime on its people. And I don't think it was very apparent until maybe his death, when we saw people really really being forced to celebrate it or mourn it, you know. And that mm-hmm. was a very odd thing to see, you know.
I think, as Lucas mentioned earlier, it was very difficult for us to feel like we understand like what Cuba is, and like we were able to get a good grasp of what it is, because I think outsider there is so far removed from Cuban people, and you see such a different way of life than what we would kind of get snippets of, and like people would kind of hint to something about their lives or about their experiences, but I felt like I never really got the full picture.
That was Antioch students Malca Barrow and Lucas Bautista. You've been listening to The Antioch Word. You can access all of our episodes online or on iTunes. Our music is a remix by me, Thomas Amrine, of the original Word theme by Seth Kaplan. Thanks to Lucas and Malca for sharing their experience with the Antioch community, and thank you for listening.